right, ladies and gentlemen, life's all about seizing opportunities. You need to be present, you need to be engaging, and you need to take chances. And I feel like I've said that intro so many times now to a point to where it's like I should be ingrained in my mind, but it's not. So we'll just keep going with the reading off the script. But the wedding industry is no different, and you only get one chance to create the perfect day. Welcome to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is AJ Cruz. I'm your host of The Perfect Day Show. And this podcast is brought to you by my company. We do wedding videography and photography called and it's called Buttoned Up. And I just want to take care of a little bit of housekeeping here really quick before we get into our special guest for today. But just for housekeeping, I want you guys to know, just remember to share the podcast. Share it with your mom, your dad, your cat, your dog, or your grandma. Doesn't matter. But we need to share the podcast to keep the podcast alive. And don't forget to leave a rating, because for every rating that you leave, we get to climb up in the charts. So I appreciate every single one of you. And let's talk about our special guest today. So I'm sitting right now with Rebecca and Derek, not David, not his dad, Derek. So I'm sitting down with these guys. They own a wedding venue and a dance studio called Vintage Ballroom, right? Here in Old Market. Yeah. And so we're going to talk a little bit with you guys, talk about your guys' origin stories, talk about the wedding venue, but let's talk about you guys specifically. So let's start with Rebecca, because we've been chatting it up a little bit. I want to hear your origin story. Talk to me about how you got into dance and how you kind of started your career.
So I'm from Omaha, danced my whole life. I started swing dancing when I was a wee baby at 12 years old. And so I did that as my only hobby my entire life. And when I finally became an adult and I was working in news and did Dancing with the Omaha Stars and met my instructor, Derek, who is now my husband. And just being in the dance industry like that shifted all of my focus to making dance a full-time career.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So what about you, David? Derek. Just kidding. I wanted to see if you'd catch it. He got that right away. He was like, dude, he's like, stop.
I'm originally from Montreal, and I started dancing in the late 90s. Got right into teaching. Started for an Arthur Maurice there. And basically, that slowly took over my life. At that point, I was still living with my parents. They moved to the East Coast of Canada. So several years later, I got the chance to move down for work in Omaha. And it was early 2000s. And I've been down here teaching dance ever since. So I've been doing it for about 20 years.
Awesome. Awesome. And so how long has Vintage Ballroom been open?
2015.
So if I can do math correctly, which I'm horrible at it, but I think that's six years?
Yeah.
Yeah?
We're heading into our sixth year.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So where did the idea for Vintage Ballroom come into place?
Well, the big problem with dance studios is they're often run by dancers and not by business people. So I've been doing this for a long time, and I've taught out of a lot of locations. And the location that I was teaching at, they were questioning whether they wanted to continue to have a studio, whether they were going to renew their lease. And since this is the only thing I do, it's my livelihood, I need to make sure that I have a place to teach. And so Rebecca and I were just driving around, LoopNet open on phone, just checking out different real estate that was available. And we actually, this one didn't even come up. We drove by and saw that this is the old Blue Barn Theater. And we saw that they were closing. So Rebecca knew where the Mercers ate lunch. And essentially we went over to Bouvet, and she didn't interrupt them. She waited till they were done and then introduced herself. And essentially that's how we got an appointment to visit here. And Mark Mercer at the time thought the space was way too big for us. But a couple of their employees really liked the idea of having a dance studio here. Mm-hmm. So they were pushing to have us get the lease here. And so we really, really lucked out in getting the space.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so the name Vintage Ballroom, was that inspired from the space or?
Yes.
Okay.
It was inspired from just the neighborhood and the style of dance as well. I mean, ballroom is by no means a new performing arts, dance. So with my love for 1920s music and just that era, and ballroom as a very old style of dance anyway, in this neighborhood, vintage ballroom just seemed so perfect for this space. And it also made it very easy to kind of create the interior of the space as well, taking that exterior charm that the old market offers and bringing that inside.
Wow. So is this all like... these posts here, these columns you support, like, were they all here naturally, or?
They were here naturally, but theaters are not really known for their craftsmanship, so.
Well, what? Black Box Theaters.
Black Box.
The Orpheum is beautiful.
Yes.
Black Box Theaters, though, it needs to be dark and dim, right? No light coming in, so. Yeah. All of the windows were walled over. Everything was black in here. Mm-hmm. And while having everything dim for a dance studio isn't necessarily, you know, the worst thing for a wedding venue, it's the opposite look you're going for.
Yeah.
Each pillar here took about 20 hours per pillar to strip 40 layers of paint. That have just been
40?
Painted. Well, you would see color after color.
They would paint it for the sets, right? And so the pillars closest to the stage, they would just paint for whatever you know, color would match that set for the performance.
Okay. Man, where was the stage originally?
On
just right there?
The far side.
The west wall.
Okay. Okay. Awesome.
This stage was originally their sound booth. So this was all walled off. There was... the stairs going in, and it was their lighting control, the sound control. So we took that down.
So you guys had to gut a decent amount of this place, but then you rebuilt it to kind of like showcase the theme that you guys were initially, or that you envisioned.
Yeah, I mean,
right?
It was mostly just gutting, not so much rebuilding, right? Because we just need open space.
Yeah.
So we sanded the floors down a couple times, sanded all the pillars down, just really brightened up the interior, took down any walls that were preventing light from coming in. A lot of the brick, like there's brick in here now, but that was all walled over because before it was a theater, it was an art gallery and you can't hang art on brick.
Okay.
Or at least at the time they didn't. Yeah. So this is the first time that this space has been showcased just for being itself. It's so beautiful and it's the first time in its history of recent history in the last few decades that it's truly just showing off its beautiful natural character.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it looks gorgeous. It looks gorgeous. So I walked in here and I don't know. I'm a big fan of like that rustic, like the vintage look. And so I was a big fan when I first walked in. So that, not to flatter you guys too much, but Derek, you mentioned when you went into business, you said a lot of dance studios are run by dancers, not business people. Can you elaborate on that? Because I found that like really interesting and that like really stuck out to me when you said that. But can you talk about that a little bit? Like what the difference is and like why that's such a big deal?
Well, it's just so anybody at a professional level. So dancers at a high professional level are as disciplined, if not more disciplined than anybody else. But when you teach the general public, your personality matters a lot more than your level of knowledge, because most people just come in for social reasons. And so you attract a lot of people who just enjoy dancing and decide they want to do this as a career. And the general personality that attracts is often free-spirited, I don't want to be.
So when we first opened, the running joke was I opened a dance studio with my husband, but we never got a chance to dance together, right? Because we were lucky enough to have a clientele already coming with him. But to be able to build up a dance clientele, it takes a while, right? So for the first couple of years, while I wanted to teach and every once in a while I would have a new student coming in, my side of the business was just running the business while Derek was he was able to teach dance. But that's the thing, so many people who want to open up shop don't understand how long it's really going to take to get new students in the door, because dancing's not like joining a gym, right? It takes a lot more courage to say, okay, I'm either gonna dance with my significant other and maybe gonna fight, and then maybe we go back and maybe we don't, or I'm gonna go dance with somebody I've never met before and go into this embrace that might be a little bit uncomfortable. So it takes a little bit more courage than just joining a gym for $10 a month, right? And so you have to have that patience, and you also have to be able to manage like a business. How are we gonna make this profitable in this growing time, right?
When you start a business like this off, a lot of times it's show up at the studio and just be present. There, no one's there, but if someone walks in. And so I've been at many other studios where their schedule's erratic, so a teacher doesn't show up for their lesson. And that happens more often than not. Or they don't have lessons, so they just close the studio for that day. And so anybody who walks by can't be greeted. So it takes a lot of discipline to be there every day, whether you have lessons to teach or not, because unlike other businesses, traditional marketing for dance isn't the most effective, because a lot of people are intimidated at first. It's really not hard. You don't need any skill to start. That's why we're here. But there's a stigma that you need to have talent to do this. And talent certainly makes anything easier. But to just get out and get started, it's actually quite easy. But people are still often intimidated by it. So it takes them a while to come into the doors and get it started.
How many times I've had, because we're busy street in the old market, right? So how many times I've had people walk by and not come in, and then every, you know, after 100 times of walking by, they finally get the courage to even just come in and pop their head in the door. But we have a double entrance, right? We have a garage door. And once that, if that's open, then we're here and open. And then we have the glass doors on the inside. And if that garage door is closed, nobody even knows what's going on in here, right? So even if we're not busy, we have to have that garage door open, because how often we just get passerbys peeking in, and then finally they get the courage to actually come in and just say, hey, what's up? What are you guys doing in here? So being present, and it just, yeah, it's all about business and patience, really. That's what it takes. I think any business to grow is a lot of patience.
Yeah, absolutely. And everything that you guys just said, it's triggered a couple of like questions that I want to ask, but I don't want to throw too many at you at once. So the first one that I want to ask, because it was something that I was curious about, was, you know, dancing is one of those things, like you said, it doesn't, like, no one has to have any special talent to like go out and do it, right? But I've noticed, so like with me, with my fiance, with my family, like with people that I know who like, they dance all the time, but like they're very shy about it. Is like, it's one of those things where for some people, it's one of those things where it's like outside of their comfort zone. So I want to hear from you, just to kind of help educate the public. But what are some steps that they can take to familiarize themselves with that, with the idea of dancing, or to kind of bring themselves out of their comfort zone?
So there's a couple of different things, but I get a lot of people who are in a relationship and their significant other dances and they don't, but they go out to the club and they want to be able to dance socially with them, and they're just so, they feel so awkward about it. So number one, just having the courage to come and take a private lesson, because when you come in the door, it's a one-on-one lesson with your instructor, and we don't care where your level is at, right? We've had people who've never danced before, who can't find timing, whatever. And when you're just on a very like private lesson, right? Nobody's judging you. There's no extra eyes. Your significant other isn't there telling you what you're doing wrong. It can be a lot more comforting. And that's where I find that people end up enjoying being able to dance with their partner, is when they take the time to just learn on their own without their partner, if their partner already knows what they're doing, because then they don't have that judgment. And then they take a couple lessons and then they get a little bit more comfortable, and then maybe they bring their partner in, or maybe they feel more comfortable going out socially. It's just knowing that when you come in the door, we really don't care where your level is at, right? The fact that you walked in here it takes a lot of bravery to do so. And we're going to respect that, and we're going to take it as slow as it needs to be.
So two things. One, learning on your own is often the least intimidating. Learning with your spouse is not bad. Learning from your spouse is not good. Yeah. It usually does not work very well.
With and from.
Yes. Learning with your spouse is manageable. Learning from your spouse rarely works well.
Nobody wants to be told what to do by their significant other.
So
I'll mark that one off for sure.
And then the second thing is, a lot of people don't realize this. This is just as true for women, but especially for men, a little instruction goes a long way, right? I can play around with cooking and kind of do something better or not. With dancing, there's so many variables. If you're moving and you're moving to music, you're dancing, mm-hmm. right? And so then a lot of times people are like, well, I'm just not good at this because I don't know what to do. Where just the great thing about ballroom dancing, Latin dancing, anything with a couple, is it's pretty structured. And so that's what a lot of people don't realize. And so you come in, and just like if you're running drills for football or basketball or anything else, you're told what to do and you repeat it. If you've done anything physical in the past, it's easier. For the people that have been sitting in an office for the last 15, 20 years, it can sometimes be harder just because you don't have that connection with your body. But for those people, it's even more important to get out and move. Because the one thing that this industry has done for me mm-hmm. is it's made me not afraid to get old. Because I teach people, I've had students as young as 5 or 6 and as old as upper 90s. And their mental acuity is there. Their physical, their mobility is much more than when I worked in the corporate world. There, I would see people in their 40s and 50s who looked like they had 1 foot in the grave. So just the act of moving, and they've had medical studies now that are so beneficial with dancing. It can be harder to start if you've just have done nothing and lived a sedentary, seated lifestyle. But if you've done any sports before, it's not going to be hard at all.
I mean, on that, we have students who are in their 60s and 70s who are dancing better than a 20-year-old. Well, it's
that's
amazing.
Good. That's good to know.
No, it's amazing what just like spending time on your body can do, yeah. right? And again, like back to that point of like those private lessons, going to a yoga class, going to the gym, there's people around. With a private lesson, there's no one watching you. You can mess up as many times as you need to before you understand what's happening because mm-hmm. no one's there to judge.
Absolutely.
And the great thing about ballroom dancing, unlike some other things, is it's a very low barrier to entry for physical ability. It's really a choose your own intensity. So I've had people post-surgery use this for rehab and whatnot. You can really start at almost a walking pace and then just continue to go up and up and up from there. So you at any level of physical ability, you can get started.
Well, I mean, Derek used dancing as part of his own rehab when he fell 3 stories onto concrete and was in a wheelchair, and he wasn't expected to walk again. And when he walked into the doctor's office, they were like, what's going on? Because you use dancing mm-hmm. in addition to other exercises, but you use that as a rehab.
Yeah, because it really pushes your full range of motion. But it luckily I'm sturdy, so I just ended up with 3 dislocated metatarsals in my foot.
Okay.
And because dancing uses really the fullest healthy range of your body, and it's gentle. It took 2 years, but you're constantly chipping away at increasing range of motion. I've had a student who had both biceps tear from horse riding injuries, and one she was actually training, and so she had she couldn't reach in an upper cupboard, and the dancing, in conjunction with physical therapy, increased her range of motion, and this was years after the injury.
Okay, so I also have a story about a student who, he was a rancher, and a bull went and charged at him, and the bull's horn went through his leg and hit an artery and completely disfigured his leg. I mean, it was very, very gruesome. They thought he was going to die. This didn't happen locally, but he was taking some lessons here after, you know, he had started his rehab. He wanted to get back to being mobile, And he could not find a gym or a yoga studio that would take him because he was just so disfigured and so damaged. Like, his leg was so damaged that they didn't think that they could help him. So he started taking ballroom dance lessons and was able to find rehab through actually dancing. So his brain wasn't sending signals to his body, his legs, the way our brain does, but through memorization of patterns, he was able to start moving again.
Wow.
And so he 100% used dance to rehab and learn how to walk again after this massive, massive injury that should have ended his life.
Yeah.
And just to clarify, obviously we're not medical professionals, but, and more often than not, what people, the ballroom dancing ends up just being a catalyst. It ends up being something that they love. And so then they seek out physical therapy in conjunction with their dance, that it gives them the motivation to do something where, and this is often years after an injury, that they just didn't have the motivation initially to do.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of range of motion things that just through gentle repetition we see improve. But especially in the extreme cases, it's just gotten people to seek better trainers. What is someone who rehabilitates?
Physical therapist.
Physical therapist. Mm-hmm. They've seeked out different physical therapists because physical therapists are like dance teachers, mm-hmm. wide variety of skill sets, right?
And there's ones that like are good fits for you and who those correct. Who aren't, right?
The ones that are the ones that treat athletes are so many, like if you're 70 years old and you're walking, they're like, why are you complaining? Mm-hmm. Right? But if you're like, well, no, I dance and I know I should be able to do this.
Yeah.
Then, and you go to see a physical therapist that specializes in sport, you're actively seeking this mobility. That's what's produced this change in a lot of people. And I, especially when I teach someone 60, 70, 80, I'm like, enjoy your dancing, but the biggest benefit you're getting is this is going to prevent you from falling in your tub. You're working your core, you're working mm-hmm. like anything that improves your balance and your stability. Just is that insurance policy as we get older.
Yeah, absolutely. I think one thing just out of this like nice, like long run that we had talking about like health, is something that I don't really touch on too much, but hopefully that like segment inspires somebody and like enlightens somebody, because I know that there's a lot of people out there who, you know, work sedentary jobs. And if you don't know what sedentary means, it just means that you stay in one place for a long time, like a desk job, right? Or anything like that. But like the importance and just moving and like taking care of your health, like I can see that runs deeper than just dancing, right? For you guys, which is like really interesting and like awesome for me to obviously have these conversations with you, is just to see like, it's not just the dancing. It's not just like the different dances you guys can learn. It's the importance and like the fact that you guys are taking care of your health and that you guys are taking care of your bodies. And that, like you said, Derek, that you're not scared, like getting old isn't something that's scary for you anymore, which is like super, super awesome. So,
and the fun factor is much higher than a lot of other activities.
Yeah,
especially when you're not used to going out and being physical. The dancing doesn't feel like a workout, right? And it works your mind as much as anything else. Yeah. And so students, it love the, especially the ones that, on average, I've had my student body has been with me for over 10 years.
Wow.
So they enjoy it.
I would probably take dancing over running any day of the week, honestly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, or biking or rowing or jump roping. Not to talk bad about it, but this just sounds more fun. So,
yes,
that's awesome. That's awesome. You were giggling at me a little bit as I was kind of like rambling, and you're like, man, this guy, he just won't stop talking, really.
No, no. I completely agree with that, though. I hate running. And I do it because I have to, right? We have to do things to stay healthy. I hate running, and dancing is so much more fun. And I get my heart pumping just as much when I'm doing a cha-cha as if I'm doing mm-hmm. a long run.
Absolutely.
And so I would prefer to dance any time over actual workouts.
I'm not a fan of continuous repetitive movement. You really need to know what you're doing, or the stress on your, I mean, I'm a big guy, and so yeah, my joints don't like it when I'm just banging on them for 10 miles.
It sucks. It's not fun, that's for sure. So I want to talk about your guys' customer experience like with your dancers, because like you can open a studio and you can teach them how to dance, but what do you guys do specifically to like retain your clientele?
Well, for example, since tying into the weddings, yeah. Right?
You beat me to it.
After 20 years, I specialize in show and competitive dancing. Mm-hmm. But I see a lot of new teachers making big mistakes with wedding couples. The number one concern when you're choreographing a dance for someone's wedding couple is for someone's wedding is that they look comfortable and natural. If it's correct to the dance that they're doing, doesn't matter. If it's the technique that they're using, doesn't matter, right? I'm gonna still teach them the same way, but if they end up doing something that's comfortable for them, that's not the standard way we do something, it doesn't matter. And a lot of newer teachers, because they learned a specific way, don't understand where you should correct something and where it doesn't matter, right? And so we can get a lot more done in 4 lessons by just focusing on what do you guys want? What's your personality? What type of dance do you want? And let's get you guys comfortable together rather than, okay, your dance is a rumba. Well, this is how you do the rumba, and you got to move your knees this way and you got to move your hips this way. Yeah,
definitely. Rebecca, do you have anything to add to that at all?
No, I mean, when it comes to like retention though, a lot of those wedding clients end up finding like that they really enjoy that, right? Some people do marital counseling prior to getting married, right? Some people take dance lessons because it teaches them how to communicate. You have to listen to each other, right? There's a lead and a follow, mm-hmm. and you have to be able to give up control and receive what the other person's asking. And they find a lot of times our clients we're teaching for weddings find that that's a really good like therapy almost. And so they'll come back after their wedding to continue dancing with one another because again, it's less of a stigma than taking like actual therapy, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm 100% for therapy. I yeah. find that no matter if you have a wonderful relationship or if it's rocky, like always having a mediator is a great thing. But yeah, some people come to us for that reason instead. Derek has seen that even with his long-term clients, that some who really don't care so much about the dance necessarily come every single week. So they're dancing together as a couple and it's a moment for them to just be together. Mm-hmm.
If you think of the psychology of dance, like in other sports, I can lift stronger, run faster, do something more efficient. And in dance, you're dancing to the song. You're not going to get it over with quicker. Right.
Yeah.
So it's that you're spending that time with that person, paying attention to every movement that you're doing. It's almost like when you after you get the initial concentration of you're doing something weird mm-hmm. for the first time, it almost becomes meditative in that you're just focusing on the movement in that moment together because that's what you're there for. Right. We're not going to rush past it. And so the couples really start to enjoy that calmness of you leave the real world, you come into the studio, and the only thing that's there is this time is for you guys.
I mean, truly, wow. What's more intimate than just being meditative with one another, right? Mm-hmm. And dancing with each other gives that opportunity. I mean, I'm always asking Derek to do yoga with me. He's not always the one to jump on it. But being able to find some sort of outlet where we can both just be at one with each other. And that's the other great thing about dancing is you don't even have to like verbally communicate. That's what I love about when I travel somewhere. If I go out of state and I or out of the country and I'm going to somewhere where I don't speak their language, but as long as I know how to say dance in their language and I go somewhere where there's a social dance, I can have a conversation with someone on the dance floor without actually having to ever talk with them. They're asking me to do things. I'm responding and reciprocating what they're asking. I find that there's no other skill when it comes to communication as dancing, because again, I've danced with many people where I can't even say hello to them because I don't speak their language. But everywhere you go in the world has a specific style of dance, whether it's Argentine tango, swing, international ballroom, like whatever it is, like if you understand how to move in their native dance, you can communicate and you can have a full conversation on the dance floor, which is, I find, just incredible.
Give me some like chills right there. Jeez. So from what I'm understanding from a newbie, it's like a love language. It's like another language that's like universal, right? It's almost.
And I would even go past that. So on the couple side of it, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But even the single people that come in on a completely, on an emotional level, that's not even that deep. We're human beings that need physical interaction, and never mind this year, right? We've been ripped away from that physical Absolutely. Interaction. But even in the past, I mean, I'm Italian. My mother immigrated to Canada from Italy, and Italians are very physical, touch, hug, pinch,
handsy.
Right?
She's yes, handsy.
But not. There's more and more communities that are not like that. And I don't think as a human being, we're meant to be isolated.
Absolutely.
And so many people I've taught over 20 years that just being held and having someone pay attention to the movement, to them for that amount of time, offers a comfort that they didn't even realize that they were missing, mm-hmm. right?
Well, it's funny. Okay, so in when you're in school or job coaching or whatever, they'll teach you how to give like a proper handshake, right? Because so often mm-hmm. a handshake is the only interaction we give with people, mm-hmm. right? And if you've never touched a stranger before, you don't really know how to like how much pressure to give in this handshake or how confident to be or whatever. And it's funny that we have job coachings on how to greet someone with a handshake appropriately, but like just having a regular interaction with a stranger where you are touching and it's not intimate, right? So it's a comfortable conversation, whatever it may be, with another human being. You start to get more confidence just in your own demeanor and yourself, and then you don't necessarily need a coaching on how to shake someone's hand because you're used to touching strangers like on a regular basis, which sounds kind of creepy. I don't mean it in that way.
I think we put enough context around this conversation for people to know it's not a weird thing to say.
It's actually funny because I've given doing this for this long, you get an honorary PhD in reading body language, especially when you do this competitively, because you're taking something that people already they may not have the highest confidence, and then you're putting them in a very high stress mm-hmm. situation because you're doing this in front of other people and you're being judged by it. And
on
so
on the competitive side.
On the competitive side.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah. And so you just see a heightened level of this. So you get really good at reading body language. So we've actually given seminars on body language to doctors and whatnot. Wow. And most of the classes that are given are very superficial, mm-hmm. right? And so it's funny to see someone who's done that class, but you can see right through them and you're like, oh, you're overcompensating for something. I don't know what,
yeah.
but you're overcompensating yeah. for something.
When he says most of the classes, like not necessarily what we're doing, right? Because most of the classes that are out there are superficial and it's the same thing taught by the same people.
Oh, I'm talking about body language yeah. classes, not yeah, yeah, dance yeah. classes. Yeah. Like corporate, yes.
Yeah.
So I was brought into a corporate world to give non-dancers how to walk more confidently, how to introduce themselves more confidently, because body language is very complex. And so you would typically think, well, if I stand tall and stick my chest forward, I'm confident.
Yeah.
But if your eyes aren't saying the right thing, if you're leaning back on your heels as you're doing that, if there's like, it's like being good at poker, right? You can just see when someone's bluffing. And most of the time, the sessions that are given to corporations are very simplistic, like one note, well, squeeze the hand, firm pump up and down, right? But
I'm confident.
Yes.
Basically, yeah. right? So I'm from my curiosity, because I feel like I've learned a lot in like the past like 10 minutes just about like body language. And now I'm like insecure. Like you're talking to me about like chest puffed down. I'm like, do I sit forward? Do I sit back? Like, do I look at you? Like,
well, no, I mean, like that's what they'll say, right? They'll,
yeah.
Like, and these if you know, watch a YouTube video on how to like be more body confident or whatever, like they'll give you the standard, put your chest forward and things like that. But that's not necessarily going to translate into
nor is it good
confident.
For your posture.
Yeah.
So essentially the one thing that dancing does that I've learned is very true. Changing your physical position over time has a dramatic effect on your mentality, and changing your mentality has a dramatic effect on your physical being. And so it's a two-way street, so you can actually approach it either way. So what they say that if you arbitrarily smile more, mm-hmm. right? When you do it initially, number one, you feel dumb, and number two, it doesn't do much. But if you continue to do it,
yeah.
your brain starts to match that physical position. So if you stand, posture is a difficult thing to talk about. In general, I say if you feel the two bones under your ears and you pull yourself up, mm-hmm. you're not going to tilt forward or backwards. That's how you should be standing, right?
Okay.
And so that's a neutral spine, and I'll look neutrally confident,
yeah.
not aggressive, not passive. Because what is confidence? Not doing any more or less than is required. So if I do more, I'm aggressive or overcompensating. If I do less, I'm passive or lazy. If I do just what's required for yeah. that moment.
Just right.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's a delicate balance to navigate.
Okay. So can you guys give me like the 30-second, 1-minute rundown of like body language? This is how I show. This is how, like, you gave like a little snippet, but like for your seminars, like if you could like take that, I don't know how long they are, and then condense that down into a minute.
To one sentence?
Yes, one sentence.
What I said with learning alignment of your spine.
Okay.
Number two, be perfectly confident in admitting you don't know something mm-hmm. or that you're wrong,
mm-hmm.
right? And just doing the smallest amount of research in whatever you want to be confident about,
okay.
right? So, for example, if we talk about dance,
okay,
a dance like tango is mm-hmm. is basically walking. And everybody who comes into the studio walks from the door to the table like a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And then they all stand up for a class and I tell them to take 3 steps forward, and suddenly everybody looks like a toddler, okay, walking for the first time, because they're like, okay, I'm where do I put my foot? And I'm like, yeah, relax, just walk normally, right? So we often look for the differences or look for the inadequacies because we're inherently trying to hide what we don't know. And after 20 years, and I tell this to Rebecca and I tell this to all my teachers, we bring in a coach that trains me and the students, and the coaches are perfectly comfortable and welcome to correct me in front of them. A lot of talented coaches ask you first, because many studios around the country do not want to be corrected in front of their students because they don't want to be put below them, mm-hmm. right? And so if that's how you approach anything in life, you're only ever going to project a false confidence. So if you're okay with
smokes,
with not knowing something and saying, well, I don't know, what should that be?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's pretty much it.
So just like really quick. So before I started doing dance full time, in my previous job, right, I thought I had good posture. I thought that I was semi-confident or whatever in my career. And then coming into the dance world full time and truly like relearning, okay, like the posture is okay for this style, but like overall, like we're going to clean that up. And so completely changing my posture, like fixing that, even though I thought I was standing up straight, I wasn't, right? And right away, I saw that like people would just approach me differently. Like they would be instantly more intimidated just because of the way I carried myself. Then eye contact is the other thing that's mm-hmm. super awkward for people to hold on to, right? And when you're dancing, especially when you're dancing at a competitive level, like some of our students do, that's the number one thing that is going to change where you're going to be placed is like, where's your focus? Are you, when you're dancing with your partner, are you looking at your partner? When you're looking out into the crowd, are you making eye contact with the crowd? And so like learning how to just stare someone in the eye, especially if it's another individual, especially like a boss figure or something, like when you're talking to somebody and you look them directly in the eye, all of a sudden you've given yourself that one up. And like, if you're comfortable enough to not break contact and they're the first one to break contact, you've just created this like, whoa moment, right?
The like image, wave. The image I try to give people is imagine, especially if you've done any sort of filming or watching any sort of video, right? One of the most annoying things is seeing camera shake, right? It can be really hard to watch.
Yeah.
So if you can imagine that whatever you're looking at is being projected on a screen, so that if I'm focusing on you and I decide to change, I change purposely. And then I change intentionally. It can make it this is especially for any sort of presentation, dance, giving some sort of presentation. The more that I'm changing where I'm looking and looking around, it's physically hard for someone to focus on you. They become, it's annoying to look at. And so then they just internalize and they start not paying attention, where a lot of people are like, well, reduce arm movements, this and that, but that's not nearly as bad as constantly moving our head and our focus around.
Yeah. This just gave me a huge revelation. And now I'm like, not insecure by any means, but like I'm paying attention to myself. So when you were talking about like eye contact, you were making solid eye contact. And I was like, I'm going to break this. And I did like four times. Cause I was like, now I'm like super aware of it. But like when I have conversations with people, like making eye contact isn't difficult until I become aware of it. And then I'm like, oh, now I feel weird.
But even at that, right. A lot of times our eyes will kind of shift around when we think we look up or we look down. And that gives that break. So it's not so awkward for the other person on the receiving end.
Yeah.
But again, like I especially like to do this now, if I'm in a like, talking with somebody who used to employ me or whatever, I really enjoy not breaking eye contact with a quote superior because I just wait to see how long it's going to take them to do so. And I don't do it like with any malicious intent. It's just like I'm comfortable holding that contact. So it's kind of, it's fun to see how long.
Yeah.
And until it's like awkward and we're both just
That's what I was going to say.
I started shaking.
Like anything, there's too much and too little, and you can start to look like a sociopath that's just unblinkingly staring at someone.
That's why I looked away, because I was like, I feel like I look crazy. Like, I don't want them to get worried at all.
One of the hardest skills, especially when working on reforming anything that's instinctive like that, and we work on this in dancing as well, is observing yourself without changing what you're doing. Because initially, the minute we become aware of something, then we start to change. And with practice, we can learn to actually observe our actions and not interrupt what we're doing. But that's a hard skill to master.
Yeah, absolutely. They just brought out all my insecurity. I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding. But okay, so we're kind of like nearing up kind of like on that 1 hour mark. And I have a couple questions that I do want to like still ask you. We haven't talked too much about the wedding industry, but like that's totally fine. I do want to dive into a little bit about how you guys got into the industry. Because like you opened this up as a dance studio, right? Mm-hmm. And I think we had a conversation last week and it was like kind of a brief question, but how did you get into weddings? Like, how did that originate?
Well, it was always the intent to host events. Yeah. We didn't know or even plan to host as many as we're doing, which we're very grateful for. Again, like that first year, it was Derek teaching dance and me just trying to build something out of this to make sure we could keep our doors open. And Derek being in the industry for 20 years, he has seen many studios open up and then double as event venues to keep that revenue flowing, because dance, it goes in flows, right? Sometimes it's busier, sometimes it's slower. So you have to be able to have a constant stream of revenue coming in the door. So he kind of had an idea right away that he wanted to do both events and dancing here.
That goes into the business side of it, right? If you diversify your income, One of the big reasons that we're successful and we can undercharge compared to a lot of other venues is a lot of other venues sit empty from Monday through Thursday, mm-hmm. right? And so the combination, we're not innovators in this. There's plenty of studios across the country that double up because they're two industries that work hand in hand very well together. Mm-hmm. So that's why it was always the intention.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I've noticed, like, you always hear in business, it's a big thing to like have, and money is not everything, but money is what keeps our doors open. Money is mm-hmm. what's like the source of our business. Right. And so you hear a lot of people say like, always have multiple sources of income, always have like, cause if you're relying on one source, what if that COVID mm-hmm. right happens?
And that's why we were really lucky this yeah. year. And, the fact that we both, teach here and we teach in Iowa, and the fact that we have two industries, it really kind of spread out mm-hmm.
that hit when
Iowa did something, it may have been a little more lenient in Nebraska, and then it switched, and then it was more restrictive on the dance, and then the dance lightened up and it was more restrictive on the weddings. So that diversification really, really helped. I mean, obviously there was still a hit, but we were able to survive where a lot of other dance studios and a lot of other wedding
around
venues
the country.
Yeah, were not able to.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so how are you guys doing now after everything, like coming into early 2021?
We're as good as we can be, yeah. right? Like, obviously we're not doing as many weddings as we had planned. We're still getting people postponing and canceling, which we totally respect. A lot of our dance clientele hasn't come back. They're waiting to get vaccinated, which again, we respect, but our doors are open, mm-hmm. right? We're super lucky that it's a family business. My family works the weddings with me. And so we don't have a bunch of people relying full time on this as their main source of income, yeah. other than Derek and I. So we were able to manage that very well. And we're open, and we're going to be open, and we have no plans.
We've weathered the worst part of it.
Yeah. yeah. At this point, it's just kind of slowly getting back to whatever we can call normal again. Mm-hmm. But I don't think anyone expects to be closed down again for 3 months because it's already here. Mm-hmm. We already have dealt with that part of it. And there are systems in place to prevent a full close down again.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We were talking about that before the podcast. Is like, it's nice to be able to start taking steps towards some form of normalcy.
Yeah.
Right. And so, I'm really excited about that. So it's awesome. But to kind of like come up on like my last question, it's one of my favorite ones to ask. So I've been waiting for this for a while. I want to ask each of you independently. So we can start with Rebecca if you'd like to. But my question for you is, what's one thing about business that you believed when you started that today you no longer believe?
I didn't know anything about business when I started. Like, who are we kidding? I was 25 when I opened. Yeah. I had just left a career that was completely different from this. Mm-hmm. A lot of people always say that, like, you don't want to... Okay, so these are the two things that I find that can be false, depending. Number one, like, you don't... if you do something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. That's a lie. Okay. Like, I work far more than if I were to have a normal job. I spend all of my money and all of my time here. Yeah. I have so many gray hairs and no children, and I know it's because of the business. Like, I'm 30 years old and I'm aging, but I love it. And yeah. the other thing is, people say, oh, you shouldn't work with a significant other. And that's probably the number one reason I don't want to go back into a normal workforce, is I absolutely love working with my husband every day. I feel like it's just like a great chance to just be, we annoy the crap out of each other, mm-hmm. but it's so great to just be around each other all day. I feel like we have a level of just intimacy that like other people can't experience because we are around each other all day. Mm-hmm. When you have a job with coworkers, you create a bond with those coworkers. Well, I'm just creating that bond with my husband, which I super, super adore and love. But those are like, I didn't know anything about business. I just started like sinking. I'm like, all right, I gotta make something work. So
wow. I love that.
Do you have
So probably, I don't know if I've ever, I would think earlier on when I was starting this, you have this idea that there's certain things you need. I need a space. I need this. I need that. And I've come to learn that that's not true at all. We have so many friends going into business, and some things like retail and whatnot, I understand. But in general, you can build a clientele. Before we opened here, I had a full student body, right? And that's the only way that we could open here. So when I first started, I would think, well, I got to get $200,000, get a space, mm-hmm. and then start my business, right? You think there's all these hurdles in front of you. And especially this day and age, there's the cost of entry for many, many, many businesses are much lower if you don't think of them traditionally, mm-hmm. right? And so that'd probably be the number one thing my mentality has changed.
Yeah, he always tells our friends, like, if you don't have a clientele now, opening a storefront isn't necessarily going to change that. Like, mm-hmm. find your revenue before you open. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I don't believe that with my hobbies, though.
Dude, do you want to elaborate on that or no? No,
we're not getting into his hobby.
I've noticed that, just to kind of like play off of like what you just said. I've noticed that with video and photo is like, I guess it for me, it's always been, I've always wanted to have my own space where I can go to, like, I guess like going into business, I've always wanted to have a space where I can go to for work, for like myself. And obviously that's my second bedroom right now. That's my office at home. But the big vision for me is to have a place where like I can go to work and I can have a team and I can like build that community exterior from where I live. But initially starting off, like it's nice to kind of be self-aware enough to know that right now, like obviously I might not have that, but just to focus on building that clientele and like building, you know, the weddings and then the corporate events, and you know, then I can start thinking about that office spaces.
There's definitely a benefit to that. I mean, we're two people that don't have kids and collectively live and work in 10,000 square feet. And so we like our space and we like our rooms for projects and here and there. So there, grew into that.
Yeah, like we didn't start with that.
Yeah,
right. At certain points, I rented floor space out of gyms. I talked to them ahead of time. Can I teach out of your basketball court?
Wow. When we first opened here, we were sharing a car at points. I don't even know. We didn't always even have a car. We had an apartment, a small apartment, but half the time, even to make rent for that apartment, we were renting it full time on Airbnb. So we were living among sawdust and just like we were living out of the ballroom while we were trying to get it open, just so we could afford to pay rent. Like it wasn't always. Even once we had this space, we didn't have this space because we were finding every single way to save money in order to just stay open, right? So we were basically, I mean, we had an apartment, but like I joke around, like we were homeless for the first couple of months to a year living out of the space while we were getting it ready.
That's crazy. I can't think of any words for myself that I can say that, like, I guess that's just something that people don't see when it comes to opening a business.
And, you know, I have a lot of businesses. I have a lot of friends who've done that as well. People don't talk about that because mm-hmm. they're embarrassed or it's taboo. It's probably illegal as well. But, like, you can't live in a commercial space. But, for a lot of these startups, you have no choice, right? Mm-hmm. You either are going to be able to one day make something out of your dream, or you can pay rent. Like, you got to make those choices. So I have a lot of friends who've opened up businesses who've done the same thing. They'll sleep there at night. They live there for the first couple of months to a year just so they can make something happen with it.
Wow. And not to mention every ounce of work that we did in here for construction, it was her and I. Mm-hmm. Like, we did, nothing was hired out. Aside from like electrical and there was some plumbing stuff, but all the deconstruction.
Yeah, don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. I have people all the time. Ooh, who's your interior decorator? I'm like, Google, I don't know, and Pinterest
hand,
inspiration, right?
Like,
it was all just through him and I, just, you know, sheer work and repetition and a lot of just late nights and awful sawdust mornings. And
probably a lot of sawdust in your lungs.
God, right? I do. I'm going to die early.
Don't say that. You dance. You'll be fine. I think that's a really important thing for people who are listening to, like, take away from that, though, is like just the sheer, like, you know, like, obviously you guys are passionate about dance, right? But, like, you know when you're passionate about something that, like, you'll go to, like, the ends of the earth to, like, try and make it happen. And you, like, you'll exhaust all your resources before you give up. And I think there's a big difference between that and then just going into business for the fun of it, right? And so that's just something that people just don't see every day.
So a final comment on, on that, especially in, I think that in any industry, like for people who want to be an actor, a lot of people will pursue that and maybe acting's not what they end up doing, but they can be in that industry. So for a lot of people that, a lot of teachers that I've seen over the years, the love of something doesn't qualify you to do it, right? You need to constantly train. You need to strive to work better, right? Just because I love something doesn't make me good at it, but it is the seed that starts that, right? One of the things that makes Rebecca and I successful is we're both we're not happy at rest. So the minute that a big project is done, we'll take the several weeks, right?
2 days lately.
Like we'll tell ourselves at the end, all right, we're not doing anything, any more projects for 6 months. But
we bought a house and we're renovating it. So this is like very close to home at the moment because we just finished our kitchen. And like a week later, I was already tearing another ceiling down. He's like, I thought we were taking a break. I'm like, no.
And she'll get far enough into it to get herself in trouble. And she's like, Derek,
can you help me? That's awesome. And you said just because you love something, you're not. Like, that doesn't mean you're good at it, right?
It doesn't qualify you to teach it, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't qualify you to be a professional at it. You need to constantly pursue that. And like I said, with teaching dance, the skill level that I attain in dance has very little to what I teach people from the beginning, right? But the knowledge that I acquire makes me a more efficient teacher, a better teacher. So the constant pursuit of improvement.
Self-development.
Well,
right?
Yes. Not just, I mean, Derek, he's been dancing for a little over 20 years now, but he's constantly learning. He never stops educating himself in the field because like any field, dance evolves. It's not the same as it was 10 years ago. It's not the same as it was in the 90s or 80s. And it's a sport that is evolving like any other sport. And if you're not evolving with it, you're just getting left behind. So we bring in coaches very, very regularly for not only our students, but our staff to be equally trained as well. It's something that we find is like one of the most important things for us and our other instructors is if you want to teach here, you have to be willing to learn as well. Because I don't care how good you are, there's always more to learn.
And I'm sure that's the same with photography, right? Liking to take pictures and owning a good camera does not make me a photographer, right? And so for me to go and charge someone to shoot their wedding is presenting a false narrative.
Yeah.
It can, if I pursue that and improve and am honest with where I'm at and what I offer, then I could start doing that sooner rather than later. Mm-hmm. But just because I like to do it and my mom thinks my pictures are great.
Can't trust your parents. I'm sorry. You can't trust your parents. If they tell you you're good at something, like go ask somebody on the corner of a street or something because they have the most biased
opinion. Seen enough American Idol tapes. Yeah. Why didn't you put them through?
That's so funny. That's awesome. I mean, yeah, no, I mean, just kind of like finish on this note, like just to, like, cause you mentioned photography and video and like getting good, like better at it. It was, you know, I don't think I started doing weddings until I was about a year and a half, almost 2 years into it. And the reason was because like when I first started doing like video, even I was doing photography and I was doing photos and video for like magicians and stuff, but like for like $25 a video. Now, like those things, obviously you see companies charging thousands and thousands of dollars for one video. But like back then, it's just about getting your feet dirty, getting your feet like wet, right? And like getting that experience. So that's kind of like those are my final thoughts on that. That's kind of just something that I wanted to tie with what you guys had said. But I appreciate you both like coming on the show. Seriously. I mean, we're sitting
Thanks
here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, yeah. You're welcome. We're sitting in the studio. This is officially my studio for like obviously the next hour. So no, but I appreciate you guys and like taking the time out of your day to be on this and like give your insight. Especially towards that, like, that last half, you guys had a lot to say talking about like body language and like, you know, starting a business, everything like that. Like there's a lot of nuggets in here that people can go back and listen to that they'll get a lot of value from.
So yeah, like dance isn't just about dance, right? Like we don't dance just because we want to dance. Like there's so many other ingredients that go into this business. Like
I tell my students, all you got to do is move forward, back, left, and right, and turn left and right. That's it.
And smile. Please smile. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I want to give you guys an opportunity to kind of like talk about yourselves really quick. Obviously, we've done this whole thing, but by talk about yourselves, I mean plug your guys' selves.
Yep.
So any promotions that are going on, anywhere that people can find you?
Yeah, so we have a new student special, which gives anyone, whether it's an individual or a couple, 4 private lessons for $99. Those private lessons are 40 minutes long. You can learn 2 different styles of dance during that special, and those private lessons are scheduled around the availability of the client Sunday through Thursday. Mm-hmm. So we teach 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. We have a couple instructors, so we can almost always make something work. It's a really, really good intro to just like, if you're scared about dancing or if you're attending a wedding or you just want to prep a little bit, it's a great chance to just get in the door. You can find us on Instagram at Vintage Ballroom, on Facebook, Vintage Ballroom Omaha. Mm-hmm. Or like,
gotta mix
send
it up
us a message.
Bit, right?
Yeah. Theballroom.com if you want to check out our website.
Awesome.
And if you've ever wanted to dance, don't wait. The number one comment we get is, oh, I should have started this X number of years ago, right? So if you have any interest at all, just make an appointment, come on in. I'm sure you'll have a lot more fun than you think. And most, I would say 9 out of 10 guys that are forced to come in here really enjoy themselves. So pretend you're going somewhere else and then drag them here.
Just say you're going to dinner next door and then go to dinner afterwards.
Yeah, I love that. I got to leave the ego at the door too. Sometimes, you know, I mean, I don't know. For me personally, I think I'm going to be doing this. I've already showed my fiance, like I said, I want to get into dancing a little bit. But for those of you guys who are listening and you're like sitting there driving your car, or if you're listening to this, if you're weird enough to like be taking a poop or something while you're listening to podcasts, I don't know if people do that, but grab your fiance, bring her on down here, check it out. So
after you're finished,
obviously don't come midway. Right. Oh, I didn't even need to add anything onto that. That's so funny. But, for us guys, you can find us at the Perfect Day Show on Instagram. Check us out on Facebook, at Buttoned Up Weddings. If you're interested in booking a wedding for video or for photo, or if you're interested in getting dance lessons for your wedding, check those guys out. But check us out at buttonedupweddings.com. That is a tongue twister. Shoot us a DM or comment on one of our posts for a shout out on the next episode, and get out there and make the perfect day.